Today's Shiur is Masecht Avodah Zarah, Daf Mem Zayin. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, 8 lines from the top by Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish asked the following question: Hamishtach v'ledekel, if somebody bows down to a palm tree, lulava ma'al mitzvah, what is the status of the lulav of that palm tree? May it be used for mitzvah? And the way the Rishonim explained this question, we've proven in our previous year that under these circumstances, it would not be used, l'gvoya, it cannot be used for the Beis HaMikdash. What our Gemara wants to know in today's year is what is going to be the halacha about using it for a mitzvah. Says the Gemara, Be'ilan, when we speak about a tree, shenot matchil l'kach, that was planted originally for Avodah Zarah, there is no question. The Torah speaks, and we're going to be learning these halachas, about an Asherah tree. And an Asherah tree is a tree that was planted with the purpose of using it for Avodah Zarah. This tree is no worse than that. If a tree was planted for Avodah Zarah, and there would be no question that such a tree cannot be used for lulav. Kite Balach, the question, says the Gemara, that we have in today's shir, Kite Balach, the question that we have in today's shir is Be'ilan Shenota, where it was planted, where we planted a seed, as we discussed in the previous shir, L'psaif Avdai, and then they started to worship the tree. So says the Gemara, Leave the Rabbi Yossi, as we learned Rabbi Yossi's opinion on Daf Mem Hei, Leave the Rabbi Yossi, there's no question that he holds that Fila Hejinami Asar, that if it was planted even not for the purpose of Avodah Zarah, but then it was used for Avodah Zarah, that the halacha is that it becomes a fil hejid nami asur. It can't be used for any purpose. Ki tibaylach, the question that we have in today's shir, says the Gemara, the question that we have in today's shir is Aliv Drabonin. But Drabonin learned that in such a case, it would be allowed to be used lehejit, but the question is lemitzvah. What would be the question? What would be the halacha about regarding use it for a mitzvah? Mimos klapi gvah. Do we consider it something that cannot be used for a mitzvah, or loy, or we don't consider it to be in that category? Tosfos and the Ravid and the Ramban all quote Rava's opinion in Masechet Sukkah Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis that say that a lulav that was used for Avodah Zarah should not be used for Bar Minim. But if it was used, the halach is you yoyt to the mitzvah. So the question is, there we're talking about an actual Avodah Zarah, and yet the halach is b'di'evid, it could be used. And the question is, why does that not have any bearing on the question that we're discussing in our shir? So they explain, because Rava was speaking about a lulav that was worshipped by a nochri for Avodah Zarah, and they never were mevatel that Avodah Zarah. And therefore, in such a case, it should not be used. Something which is being used for Avodah Zarah, it's inappropriate that it should be used for a mitzvah. But b'di'evid, it's okay, because even though the tree is certainly also bahano, but we have a rule, mitzvah slav l'henes netnu. A hano from a mitzvah is not considered a hano, and therefore l'chatchili shouldn't be use it. But when we speak about Reish Lakish's question in our Gemara, Reish Lakish is speaking about a case where a nochri was mevatel d'avodah zarah. And now the question is that even though the Nochri was Mevatel d'Avodah Zarah, the Gemara wants to know what is the status of that lulav. Is the halacha that l'chatchila we shouldn't use it, but b'di'evid, or we may? Or is the halacha that it could be even used l'chatchila? That's one way of learning. Another way of understanding Reish Lakish's question, Reish Lakish actually disagrees with Rava. And Reish Lakish opinion is, unlike Rava, that even after the Nachri was Mevatel Avodah Zarah, you should not use it for a mitzvah. Because something that was used for Avodah Zarah certainly should not be used for a mitzvah. The question here is, what will be in Halacha where Hamishtach V'Ledekel, where it's only, where it never became an actual Avodah Zarah, what will be the halacha under those circumstances? Says the Gemara, Ki Asa, when Rav Dimi came from Atsoma, so what is the case? Says the Gemara, Ki Asa Rav Dimi, Amar B'Sherish Shabit L'Kam B'Oilei. Rish Lakish's question is about the case where Vatel Avodah Zarah, and now the question is, Yesh Dichu Etzel Mitzvahs. The question here is a whole new discussion. If something which was disqualified for a mitzvah, and now that disqualification is lifted, do we say Yesh Dichu Etzel Mitzvahs? Do we say that something that's disqualified remains disqualified, or ain't Dichu Etzel Mitzvah, or is it not Dichu Etzel Mitzvahs? Says the Gemara, Tev Shalai, we should be able to answer the question, Midatan. Well, we learned a Mishnah in Masech Techulin that pays Zayin Amin Aleph. The Mishnah speaks about a case where we know that when somebody shechts a chay or oif, the Torah requires that we do kisi adam. So the halacha is if somebody shechted a chay or oif, did kisi adam, and then after he did kisi adam, for niskala, the blood got uncovered. The halacha says that we don't have to cover it again. That's when the person did the mitzvah of kisi adam. But kisa ruach, if it was covered up by the wind, and now it got uncovered, chayav l'chasis. This halacha, that if it was covered by the wind and gets uncovered, that we have to recover it, is elok chazav nizgala. Only if it got uncovered by the after it was covered. Avla Chazvin Skala, if it wasn't uncovered, Potem El Chassis, there is no obligation to cover it. And of course, the Mefarshim asked the question, what's the Chiddush in this halacha? The blood is covered. So if the blood is covered, that's all we look for. That. So the Mefarshim answers that the Chiddush here is that covering by the wind is considered a sufficient act of covering. Vavinaba, and now we try to understand Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. Ki chazvin esgala mayhava. Why, if it was covered by the wind, and then after it got uncovered, do we have to cover it? Why don't we say the concept, ahar v'etchitchi, while it was covered, so it became no longer required to have kisi adam, as we just finished explaining. So once it no longer had the status that it's mechuyev in kisui adam, it became dochui from having to have kisui adam. So then, why do we have to think about recovering it? V'amar Papa Zoyis Ameris. So Rav Papa says, from here we see the concept of ein dichui etzel mitzvahs, that just because it became uncovered doesn't mean it no longer has that requirement. The Achrayim make a very interesting point that Rish Lakish lived much before Rav Papa lived. So how could the Gemara use something that Rav Papa said to answer a question that Rish Lakish is posing? So there's a number of ways of learning this. One way of learning it is, it's not only Rav Papa that learned this. Rav Papa is the one that we heard explain it in talking about Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. But this was a well-known opinion in the yeshiva, even without Rav Papa. This was an opinion. Or what the Gemara means to say is that indeed, Rish Lakish never heard what Rav Papa said. They weren't contemporaries in any way. What the Gemara means to say is that after we now have learned and understood the opinion of Rav Papa, so now at this point, what the Gemara is saying is the question should be answered that we see that we don't apply the concept of Dichu Etzel Mitzvahs. Says the Gemara, what was obvious to Rav Papa is not so obvious. Rav Papa goofy boyle. What was posher to Rav Papa is not so obviously. The Rav Papa goofy boyle, mifshe pshitale deindicha mitzvah. Do we say that once it's no longer required to have a mitzvah, that once it can't have the mitzvah, it's no longer in the category? Whether it releases a kula, that means if the ashera became bottle, so even though while it was an ashera, it cannot be used for lulav, but now that's not an ashera, it can be used. And slosha l'chumra, regarding kitzei adam, that there would be an obligation to do kisei adam, adama, or maybe the way to understand is svuki masapkale. There's actually a question. L'chumra minin, and therefore we're going to use the concept of dichui l'chumra, and we're not going to say dichui etzel mitzvahs. And that's why in the case that we're discussing here about the kisei adam, we will require kisei adam again. But l'kula, but we won't say this regarding the halacha, l'kula lo yaminin, we won't say it regarding the case of the avodah zarah, the ashera. And there we'll say that once it became disqualified, it remains permanently disqualified. And the Gemara remains with a teku. The Gemara does not actually answer the question. Tosis asks that the Gemara speaks about a case in Masechet Sukkah, that a case where we had a das, that the top of the hadas was cut off before Yontif, and in Yontif, there was a berry that grew in that spot, and now the hadas is considered a good hadas. What do we say? Do we say that since at the beginning of Yontif it wasn't a kosher hadas, and now it is a kosher hadas, it's kosher? Or do we say that since it was disqualified, it remains disqualified? And there the Gemara Masechta Sukkah remains with a teiku. On the other hand, there's another Gemara Masechta Sukkah that on Daf Lamed Beis that discusses that if there are berries that grow on a hadasim, if there are more berries than leaves, the hadas is possible. And the halacha is, you're not allowed to remove those berries on Yontif because you're making the hadas into a kosher hadas. That seems to mean that if those berries were to fall off by themselves, or even if you took them off, which you shouldn't have, it would be a kosher hadas. Why is that the case? If at the beginning of Yontif there were too many berries that disqualified the hadas, and we say that once it's nitcha, once it's disqualified, it remains disqualified, why is it not permanently disqualified? So Tosfos answers that in a case where we have the avodah zarah that we just said, that they were mevatel the avodah zarah, or the hadas that the berry grew on top, there it's not something which is in our hands, because a Yisrael cannot be mevatel avodah zarah, as we've been learning in our shir, and a nochri, can be mevatel avodah zarah, and the berry that grows on top of hadas is not something that a human being could cause to grow. Therefore, the question there, we say that once it's disqualified, it remains disqualified. Whereas when we speak about the hadas that has all these berries, yes, we're learning that they should not be removed on Yontif, but even though we're learning that they should not be removed on Yontif, still the halacha is that they can be removed. They certainly can be removed before Yontif. And as we discussed a moment ago, it could be removed if it was removed on Yontif, but the evidence is fine because that's something that's in our hands to do. And since it's something in our hands to do, it has a very different halacha. The Sefer Chelkas Yaakov has a sefer called Kavod HaKashiyasa. The sefer Kavod HaKashiyasa is a compendium of many questions. And he asks, what is the case that we're speaking about in our Gemara? Is it a lulav that was cut before Yontif, or it's a lulav that was only cut on Yontif? He says that presumably we're speaking about a luv that was taken off on Yontif. And he quotes a Magen Avraham that says, in the name of the Rashba, that if a lulav was still on the tree before Yontif, then that lulav is muksa, and therefore it cannot be used on Yontif. So, ask the Kaaba, the Kishaisa, from our Gemara it seems that that's not a problem. Because, just like a lulav that was connected to the tree on Yontif, the halacha is, it remains muksa and cannot be used in Yontif. The reason being because it was dochui. So ask the Sefer Kaveh the Kishaisa, why don't we say the same in our Gemara? That if this lulav at one point, as we're learning, was avodah zarah, it becomes nitcha and should remain permanently nitcha. Why is that Magen Avraham Rashba not a riot to our discussion? So he gives a number of answers to this question. One answer is that he gives that there's a nafkamina between muksa and avodah zarah. He says that what would be, as we just discussed a few moments ago, if somebody took a lulav that was muksa and used it on Yontif. So the halacha is that l'chatchilat shouldn't be used, but if the evidence was used, it would be fine. Our Gemara, he's saying, his question is not just, is the Gemara's question here is, would it be fine with the Eved, since it was avodah zarah? Another nafkamina, he says, is regarding Cholamoid. Yes, if a lulav is muksa at the beginning of Yontif, it can't be used on Yontif, it can be used on Cholamoid. But if it's regarding the issue of avodah zarah, there's no difference between Yontif and Cholamoid. Another nafkamina, that what would be in the case that he designated before Yontif, and he said before Yontif that I'm going to use this lulav on Yontif. So then, since you're allowed to cut down a lulav on Yontif, it won't be muksa. But that wouldn't help for this situation. Another nafkamina will be that what would be the halacha if a nachri cut down the lulav, and he did not cut the lulav on behalf of a Jew. So if the issue is when we speak about muksa, that wouldn't be considered a problem of muksa. But when we speak about avodah zarah, it would be. Another nafkamina, he says, is why would be the halacha if a lulav of muksa got mixed up with other lulavim that are not muksa? He wants to say that there's a difference between avodah zarah and muksa. Muksa will become bottle. Avodah zarah would not be bottle. Another nafkamina is that what would be the halacha if you're allowed to take down that lulav on Yontif because you have an oichel nefesh need for that lulav? So oichel nefesh takes away the iser muksa, but it can't take away the iser of avodah zarah. Another teretz he gives is that when we speak about muksa, we're not allowed to use on Yontif. But there's no obligation to destroy muksa, to burn muksa. But when we speak about avodah zarah, if it's considered avodah zarah, the halacha requires that it be destroyed. So now, if it's muksa, it's not something if it's something that has to be destroyed, the Gemara speaks often about the concept of kesusei mechtev shiure, that something that has to be burnt halachically is viewed as it doesn't have a shear. So now we'll have a great nafkamina. If the vart is when we speak about muksa may not be moved, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. We don't apply the concept of chesusei mechtev shiure. When we speak about avodah zarah, which has to be burnt, so if it has to be burnt, it doesn't have a halachic shear that it should be used to be able to be used, and therefore the two situations are not the same. One more nafkamina is that muksa, we know we're not allowed to carry muksa. We're not allowed to hold muksa in a regular fashion. So now there's a discussion in Masechta Sukkah if one did the mitzvah d'alminim not in the usual manner. By not carrying in the usual manner, are you yoitz the mitzvah or not? So he wants to suggest, according to the opinion that you yoitz the mitzvah even if you did not do it in the usual manner. So muksa is not completely disqualified. You can't hold muksa in the usual fashion, but you could still do the mitzvah, according to that opinion, by holding it not in the usual fashion. But if avodah zarah, it doesn't make a difference how you're holding it, avodah zarah, if it's osur, if it's still considered avodah zarah, you can't use it. Boy, rapapa, hamishtachvel behema, if somebody bowed down to an animal as avodah zarah, what's going to be the halacha l'tcheles? What will be its status as far as tcheles? And the Gemara delves into the question. Tcheles demai, what type of tcheles are we talking about? Ila tcheles the kahanim, if we're speaking about the tcheles that we want, that the kahanim used to wear in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Big Day Kahuna. So the halacha is that, can we use that? The halacha is that even if we'll say that machshire carbon to carbon, the halacha here is Haina b'ayid Rabbi Bechama. This is the question that we learned in our previous year that Rabbi Bechama asked, what's the halacha machshire carbon? And if it is that considered like a carbon and we couldn't use it or not. V'tcheles l'tzitzis, and if the question is, can we use it for the mitzvah tzitzis? So says the Gemara, that's the question that we asked now by Rish Lakish about something that was used for avodah zarah, rachman tzlan, can it be used for a mitzvah? Says the Gemara, enechanami. Says the Gemara, that loy have a labayilay. The truth is, there was no reason to ask this question. Once the question regarding the lulav was asked, there's no room for this question. The high the kabayilay ha, why was this question answered? Because there were other questions that come up. Tzimmer malat tcheles, it's not just about the tzimmer, the wool being used for tcheles. Kani malach hatzaitris, what about, can we use the horns of the animal for the chatzaitris that they would blow, that they would use as an instrument when they brought the carbon? So Taisus asks a question. He says that the Gemara Masechta Menachos says that the chatzaitris were made out of silver. So, and no other material may be used for the chatzaitris. So what kind of a question is this? So Taisus answers that there the Gemara is speaking about the chatzaitris that the Kohanim would blow with. They must be made out of silver. Here we're speaking about chatzaitris that were used by the Levim as they played instrument by a Krovus HaKarbon. And they may be made out of horns. Another Teretz Rabbeinu Yehuda suggests that when the Gemara over there says that the chatzaitris have to be made out of silver, that was when the Torah was speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. When the Torah is speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah says the chatzaitris that you make have to be made out of silver. But in future generations, they did not have to be made out of silver. Shekeha, malachalilin, the bones of this animal, can they be used to make flutes that they used as instruments? Bnei me'eha, the intestines, could they be used, lepiris, for the strands of the harp? So says the Gemara, I leave the mandame ikashir b'kli, according to the opinion that says that the music that has to be accompanying the carbon has to be with an instrument like the bialach. There's no question. Because the vadi asr, it's no different as we started as machshiri carbon. Ki di bialach, I leave the mandame path. According to the mandame, that the shir is primarily performed with singing. Besume kol ba'alma, and therefore the instruments are just there to help the singing. And since they're only there to help the singing, the halacha was my sinah, we could use these parts. Even though they are not the main way we perform the mitzvah, but they're there as part of the mitzvah, they're there as part of the way the carbon is brought and of the usher. And here too, the Gemara remains with a teiku. So ask the Gemara, boy Rava, mishtachvel amayon, if somebody bowed down to a mayon, to a well, meimav, the water, malon asochim, can we use that water for nisach hamayim on the mizbeach? We know that on Sukkos, part of the avoda was that every day they did nisach hamayim. Says the Gemara, let's understand the question, says the Gemara. Ilem labu kasogid, what does it mean when somebody bows down to the water? Does it mean that he bows down to his reflection, not to the water at all, and therefore the water doesn't get affected. He's bowing down to the water, and therefore, the question is, they can't be brought in Mizbeach. But ask the Gemara, if that's the question, why do we have to speak about them being used on the Mizbeach? What would be the halach of the water in the pail? Could a hedget use it? Because if they were used for Avodah Zarah, so then it becomes Avodah Zarah. And if it becomes Avodah Zarah, even a hedget can't use it. Why are we speaking about this case? So again, if it's the reflection, there is no question. And if it's not the reflection, there is no question. Answers the Gemara, when somebody bows down to water, he means lamay kosaga. He means to bow down to the actual water. The question over here was, lamayin the kamei kosagid, what does it mean, to which water is he bowing down to? Is he bowing down to the actual water that's here? The kamei kamei azdu. But that water that he bowed down to keeps on flowing away. Or he means to bow down to the entire current of water, not only to the water that's actually in front of him. Ask the Gemara, v'mimitzri, could somebody make water that belongs to the Rabbim Osir? Ask the Gemara, v'amrabi yachim, shim rabishim ben yitzodik, ma'im shal Rabbim, water that belongs to the Rabbim, ain't in the Sarim. You can't make that Osir. Says the Gemara, l'tzricha, the question we're speaking about, the Karnavoy Ma'ari, when the water is coming from a Mayan, which is in his field. And since it's coming from water in his field, it doesn't belong to the Rabbim. And since it doesn't belong to the Rabbim, and as the Tosfos says, it not only doesn't belong to the Rabbim, he never gave it over to the Rabbim. He wants that water to be exclusively his. And since he wants that water to be completely his, the halacha is that it will be asur. But here we're speaking about, if it's Mayim Shel Rabbim, you can't make water that belongs to the Rabbim asur. The Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlita in his Sefer Tuvcha Yabia brings a very interesting story. He says about 100 years ago, there was a story in Egypt, and the king and queen were taking a walk, and there was a mayon, there was a well in the yard of the palace of the king, and the queen decided that she wants to jump into that well and swim there or take a bath there. And the king said, I don't want you to do this. And she didn't care, and she did it. The king, at that point, a very similar story to Achashverosh and Vashti. And at that point, the king took three great people. What to do with this queen? And there were three people that he appointed to discuss this question were people who were from the three big religions that were at that time in Egypt. And one of the people was the Rav of Egypt. His name was Rav Nachum. And he didn't know how to advise the king. What would the halacha say in such a circumstance? So this Rav Nachum sent this question to Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin in Yerushalayim. And Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin took out our Gemara. And he says, our Gemara says that the water, if somebody bows down to water, the water that was in front of him is not the water that now he wants to know, could he use that water for a mitzvah, or could he use the water at all? Is it Avodah Zarah? And the Gemara suggested that, well, the water that he bowed down to is not there anymore, and now we have different water. So he said, tell the king that that's what we should think about in this circumstance at all, as well. The king told the queen, I don't want you to jump into this water. And she violated what the king said, a terrible thing to do. But let's think about it. Which water did the king say that he should not jump into? The water that he said that he should not jump into is the water that was right there now. But the water she ultimately jumped into is a different water. And therefore, since it was a different water, it's not the water that the king spoke about, and it's not considered that she violated what the king said. Says Mishnah, Mishahaya Kaislai Samach Lavaris Kachavim, somebody whose wall was next to an Avodah Zarah. That means that somebody has his house built right next to a base of Avodah Zarah, and he shares a wall, there's a wall of his house that is shared with the wall of Avodah Zarah. And the way Rashi explains the Gemara, that we're not speaking that the house itself is worship of Avodah Zarah, we're speaking about the house is a house of Avodah Zarah. Moreover, the Rishonim point out, when this person put up his house, he did not put up the house in that fashion. He had a house, an attached house, let's say, and now the other house became a base of Avodah Zarah. And now Nofel, this wall fell down. Oslof Noisa, he's not allowed to build that house because he's building a house for Avodah Zarah. Ketzid Yasa, what should he do? Kainz B'tach Shloi Abba Amis, he should move into his property for Amis. And as the Ritva points out, four Amis is the maximum. That means if his house is not that big, we don't necessarily have to distance it by four Amis. But four Amis is the maximum. If the war, in other words, we don't want the Avodah Zarah to benefit. And we don't want you to benefit from the wall of Avodah Zarah. But let's say, if the wall is half yours and half the Avodah Zarah, so we look at the situation as a 50-50, and therefore you have to distance four Amis from the Avodah Zarah wall. So if the Avodah Zarah wall is two Amis thick, you would have to only distance two more Amis, and like that, you're four Amis away in total from the Avodah Zarah. Next case, Avon of Atzva Afroi, all of the materials, the stone and the wood and the cement of that wall, Metamim Kesheretz, the halach is they have tumah like a tumas sheretz. Shenem Shakets Teshakzena, that the Torah says that Avodah Zarah Shakets Teshakzena, and Shakets Teshakzena is the same wording as a sheretz, and therefore it has the same halacha of it has the halacha of tuma sheretz. The Kiva Omer, it has tuma like a nida. Nemar, the pasuk says regarding Avodah Zarah, Tizrim kid my dova say taimalai. The word dova means Avodah Zarah. Man nida matamba masa. Tumas nida is that if somebody touches, if somebody carries something that a nida touched, even though he's not touching it, he becomes tuma af Avodah Zarah, so too will be the halacha that regarding the tuma of Avodah Zarah, it's a severe tuma. And that's what Rashi explains. Sheretz is only matamba b'maga, because not b'masa. So the way the Bar Tanura explains that why the first man d'ma holds it's only a tuma d'rabbanan, and since it's only tuma d'rabbanan, they only said it's tama matamba b'maga. Rashi also points out that what happened over here is that the wall fell down, and since the wall fell down, we don't know which material belongs to the Jew and which belongs to the Avodah Zarah. So Taisus Yontif asks that if we just said that this tumah is only tumah drabbanon, by drabbanon we say breira. So why don't we say that every piece that he picked up is his, because we'll say yesh breira. So the Taisus Yontif answers that question by saying that since we're speaking here about Avodah Zarah, and as we've been learning in our shiurim, Avodah Zarah is very strict, and therefore, even though by drabbanon we don't normally say breira, we say yesh breira, by Avodah Zarah, even by something which is a din drabbanon, we don't say breira, and we can't just rely on saying retroactive designation. The Torah tells us the episode where Lavan and Yaakov, and when Yaakov left the home of Lavan, and Rachel took the Avodah Zarah of her father. And the pasuk says that her father was searching, Lavan was searching for the Avodah Zarah. And when he came into the tent of Rachel, she says to her father, don't be upset. So the pasuk pshat that we always learn is that Rachel was excusing herself that she can't get up because she says that she's a nida. And since she's a nida, she can't get up. But I saw that the Sefer Chanukah Satorah has a whole new explanation in that Gemara. What he was saying, what Rachel was saying to her father, I'm sitting on top of the Avodah Zarah, and the Avodah Zarah ki derech noshimli. And to me, the Avodah Zarah is, as we just learned in the Mishnah from Akiva, is Tamei Kenida. Since the Avodah Zarah is Tamei Kenida, I don't want to give you something that has such a serious tuma. So the Mishnah said that if you have a wall next to the Avodah Zarah, next to the wall of an Avodah Zarah, the halacha is you should distance your wall. But ask the Gemara, why would that be an acceptable approach? You're giving the Avodah Zarah more empty space. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Chanina, Misura Dovalei Beis Kisei. In that empty space, you make a bathroom. Ask the Rav Tznisa, how could you make that space into a bathroom? Using the bathroom has to be in a place which is discreet, not in an open place next to the wall of Avodah Zarah. Says the Gemara, Dovalei Beis Kisei Delilah. They used to have a bath, outhouse that they used only at night. Ask the Gemara, Vamamar, what's the definition of a person that the tznu that uses the bathroom properly? That even at night he goes to a place which is not public, even though it's night, just like he does that by day. And even though the Gemara Masechta Brachos explains this, that at night you don't have to distance yourself as much as you distance yourself by day, but even at night, you have to go to a place which is not an open area next to the wall of homes. Says the Gemara, Davalei Latanikas. He made the bathroom for Tanikas. They don't have to have this tznius in a bathroom. Inami, the garden lay behizmi vehigni, that he put there thorns and all different types of things that make it difficult to work there. And since you did all these types of things that make it difficult to work there, so therefore even nobody's ever going to go there, and therefore it's not a problem. Says the Gemara, there are three types of homes that the Gemara is going to identify: homes and different things, different categories as far as Avodah Zarah. Shalosh Batim Haim, there are three types of homes that were used as far as Avodah Zarah. This, as the Rishonim explain, is speaking, Rashi says, that the house was built that they will worship the house. As an Avodah Zarah, Hareza Osir. That home is Osirban Anor. However, as we keep on learning in our Shurim, that if it belongs to a Nochri, we know that a Nochri has the ability to be Mevatel. A Nochri has the ability to Mevatel Avodah Zarah. And if the Nochri is going to be mevatel the Avodah Zarah, no problem. Kaidoi, says the Gemara V'saidoi, if somebody plastered the house or made engraving and pictures, la'avodis kechavim, or v'chidesh, or he did something new to the house with the intention that it should be used for Avodah Zarah, so then the halacha is that you have to take off this addition from the house. So what you do is noitel mashachidesh, take off this extra part that was made for Avodah Zarah, and therefore you come back to the original house. Then the loch and the house is not usur Avodah Zarah. But this is only if the house was never worshipped Avodah Zarah. Next case is hichnas l'toich Avodah Zarah. If a house you had Avodah Zarah taken into the house, and now you take the Avodah Zarah out of that house, then the halachas is a mutter, then it's not a problem anymore. Says the Gemara Amarav, in explaining our Mishnah, Mishtach Labayis Osroi. Alma, when we talk about a house is something that is obviously connected to the ground. And we've been speaking about something, Mechuba L'Karka, is it or isn't it Avodah Zarah? Alma, obviously, says the Gemara, that the materials that the house was made out of were not attached to the ground. And obviously our Mishnah says that if something was detached and then you build it, and therefore it could become Avodah Zarah, and it's not like the mountains and the valleys that we've been discussing that can't become Avodah Zarah. Says the Gemara, V'anam b'natanan. Our Mishnah is saying that when you built a Avodah Zarah, it seems that if it was already built, and since it's connected to the ground, it doesn't become Avodah Zarah. Says the Gemara, this is the way to understand the Mishnah. Bono, apish lo yishtach v'lo. If you built the house for Avodah Zarah, even though you didn't bow down to it, the halacha is that it's osur hishtachve. Another halacha is that if you bow down to it, apish lo yibono, even if it wasn't built originally for Avodah Zarah, it's also the osur. Says the Gemara, but if that's the way to understand the Mishnah, so we have a new category. And therefore, what did the Mishnah say? Yihachi shloisha, abahava. We have now another category. One is a category where you built a house for Avodah Zarah. Another is when you have a built house and you bow down to it. Says the Gemara, kivin d'lin yibitl. Our Mishnah is also focused when you can be mevatel it. And the halacha is that doesn't make a difference if you built the house for Avodah Zarah or if you bow down to the Avodah Zarah. The halacha is that a nochri has to be mevatel it. And if it belongs to Yisrael, as we've been learning, Yisrael does not have the ability to be mevatel it. Therefore, it's all considered just like one category. So Rashi teaches us, as the Mishnah said at the end of the Mishnah, that if you have a house that had Avodah Zarah in it, and now you take out Avodah Zarah, then it's not a problem anymore. But Rashi adds that when is this halacha applicable? Only if the Avodah Zarah was put in the house on a temporary basis. So Rashi seems to be telling us that if a house was designated to permanently have Avodah Zarah, then the halacha will be that even after the Avodah Zarah is removed from the house will still be usur. Because at that point, if the house was used on a permanent basis for Avodah Zarah, it falls into the category of Mishamshe Avodah Zarah. And we learned, and will learn, that Mishamshe Avodah Zarah have the same status of Avodah Zarah, and therefore it requires bittul through a nochri. And without bittul from a nochri, it's still considered Avodah Zarah. The Ramban explains that the Mishnah is speaking about a house that had Avodah Zarah there on a permanent basis. So why isn't it considered Mishamshe Avodah Zarah? Because they hold that the Nochri removing the Avodah Zarah from that house is equivalent to an act of Bittul. The Magen Avraham quotes a Tshuvas Re'ein, who speaks about purchasing a building that was used for Avodah Zarah and making it into a shul. He says that since the actual building was not what they worshipped, so he says when the Nochrim sell that house, it's an act of Bittul, and they take out the Avodah Zarah from the house, and therefore that building can now be used for a shul. The Eliyahu Rabbah, however, disagrees and says that a building that was previously used as Avodah Zarah cannot be made into a permanent shul. He says, even if we'll say that selling the building and removing the Avodah Zarah is an act of Bittul, that means that you could use the house for your own purpose. But to make the house into a shul, he says a concept that the Gemara speaks about, and we've had already, Mos Klapa Gavoya. And that's really what we began our shiur with today, that the lulav of such a tree, how could you use it for mitzvah? Mr. Brewer says that this Re'im, quoted by the Magen Avraham, who says that you can make a base Avodah Zarah into a shul, was speaking about a base Avodah Zarah that did not have any idols, in the Avodah Zarah. He wants to suggest that the halacha will differentiate between what type of Avodah Zarah did you have in that house. If you had in it real Avodah Zarah, and it was used on a permanent basis for that purpose, then you should not make that into a shul. If it was the type of a religion that doesn't actually worship an Avodah Zarah, even though it was a foreign religion, and it was sold, and everything in that building was removed, then he wants to say there's room for leniency. Continues the Mishnah, Shlosh Avonim Heim, that there are different halachas by stones regarding the use of Avodah Zarah. Evan shechatz metchila. If you have a house that were, if you have a stone that was taken to be used lepimus to be the base on which they're going to put the aveda zara, harezu asura. And even if it was never used, it still has the din of aveda zara, and the nachri has to be mevatel it. Side of a kaida, if you have the stone and you painted, you plastered it, or you made pictures on it, you engraved in it, l'shem avodas kochavim, noitel mashit side v'kayit, you take off the extra piece, and the rest of the stone is mutter. Hemeral avodas kochavim, if you have a stone, and now you put an avodah zara on that stone, the halacha is silka, when you take the avodah zara off, and raise them a teres. Omer avami, when the Mishnah speaks about seed v'kidut, says, mar seed v'kayit v'guf shlovin. It's speaking about that you did something in the actual stone. And that's when the stone is a problem. But if you just put a coating on top of the stone, it would be a very different halacha. Says the Gemara, but how could you say that? This Mishnah is similar to the Mishnah we learned a moment ago. And the Mishnah we learned a moment ago was about a house. But during the Bais Tanan, or Bais La Begufe, when we speak about the house, it's not talking on the Bais Lab Gufay, it's not in this house itself, and yet Umitzer, says the Gemara, no, when we speak about the house and we speak about the cement, we're talking about the actual house. Bais Nami Bay Urbi. We're speaking about that you put plaster between the bricks. So the actual house became a Avodah Zarah. Says the Gemara, but why would we say that that's the case of the house? Milay Eskinen, can't we be explaining the house is spoken the Shayi, that you have a smooth house for hard to shine, and then you put plaster on top of it. And yet, the halacha is that you have to remove it. Al-Kiyat Medravemi says, Malini Bitalema. Afka the side of the guy, the Guf Shalevin, what he's teaching us is that even though you made something in the actual stone, Kinoto Mashim Chiddush, if you take out that improvement, Shapa Dami. The Mad Tamid, the Rewa might be thinking, Side of the guy, the Guf Shalevin. If you do something in the actual stone, the halacha should view it. Ke'evin shechatz metchila avodas kochavim damya. It should be considered like a house, a stone that was made to avodah zarah. That we learned, you have to be mevatel it. Taking off the improvement is inadequate. The titza kula kamash milan. That in the halacha is that even if you did something in the stone alone, as long as you remove what you did in the stone, that is adequate to make it considered that you were mevatel avodah zarah.